Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FREE.
This is Carl Studna, author of Click Choosing Love One Frame at a Time, and you are listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So good morning. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show. And it's Thursday. It's about 6 a.m. And I was going to ride solo, except I have a couple of mates here who are visiting from Toronto. Hi, guys.
Hello. Good morning, David.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
So this is Freddie and Larry. Larry was actually on the show recently. I met Larry through Fred. And so, Larry, you're... We're how long have we known each other? It's a few months?
Oh, less than 6 months.
And then you come on the show, and that was a great show, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was great.
Yeah, and now you're here.
In the humble abode in the sky, I mean, it's absolutely incredible here. You know, when you sent the picture of your view from your room, you get here is absolutely spectacular. That's just a very small.
Well, this is your first time out west.
It's my first time, and I'm telling you, I am absolutely in love. It's absolutely incredible here. Bad view in the entire city.
Well, Kelowna, yeah. So those of you who are listening around the world, Kelowna, British Columbia, is about 4 hours from Vancouver. And so really, if you had to describe the west coast of Canada, or that whole area, the western region, British Columbia, Alberta, it's how would you describe it if you had to describe it in a few words?
You know, the culture reminds me a little bit of, California, and you get to the beaches, it's just everybody's got a smile on their face. I mean, the vineyards that are around here, I mean, it's producing fun. The environment around this area, you feel it. You feel it when you're walking through. We were at lunch at a nice winery yesterday, and I don't think I've met a nicer hostess than yesterday. But really, made it an experience for us.
Yeah.
And I like to maybe say that this place creates experiences, not just a view and beautiful homes and landscape, but the experience that comes with the people. I mean, they really come here for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's we were just talking about that. As we look out from the deck there, there's one home. It's a 35,000 square foot home, and there's people who listen to this show who it's hard to comprehend people living. I mean, obviously, we don't live in a big house like that, by the way. But it's beautiful. But it's mountains and lakes everywhere, and it's just a very clean. People always ask me, how did I end up in Canada? But it's just a very gentle life. Don't you feel that? It's easy.
I realized it this morning when I got up that I never looked at the TV once. We never had TV on once.
I don't own a TV.
Oh, there you go. That's why. There we go. Now we know why there's a TV. But I had no interest in it. And I was...
There is a TV downstairs. Yeah, but it came with the house.
You got to get that out of the box.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But we were... Fred and I... you had left, and Fred and I were watching the water the other night, and it was like, as I said, God painting on the water. It was like all these patterns moving on the water, and it was absolutely spectacular. And it just mesmerizes you when you look at that and the landscape around it. This morning, I happened to wake up around 4:35, and
I had a bladder like that once.
Well, we did drink a lot of water. But to see the glow around the mountains and that orange, you just know it's going to be another beautiful day. But it was spectacular. Yeah, the feeling is just incredible.
Now, Freddie, you met me. How many years has it been?
We've known each other now for 20 plus years, and
it was 1990, I think I met you, right?
1989, I think sometime in that area.
But you met me when I was I was so broke that I went to Toronto. I met Freddie in Toronto at a meeting. And I was so broke, someone had to pay for my flight to go to Toronto. Do you remember that?
I remember.
And I arrived there, and my suit bag had ripped. I had one of these cloth suit bags. So now I walk out of the airport, I've got all my clothes hanging on my arm. And I show up there with no money. And I remember I had to rent a flat in Yonge and Sheppard in Toronto. And they evicted me because I kept stealing the food out of the fridge because I was so hungry. So, Freddie, the first time I met you, I told you a lie, right?
You told me it was your birthday. That's right.
And I think it was about 6 months later he realized it wasn't because it was my real birthday. I said, it's my birthday. He said, how can it be your birthday? I already bought you
a year.
I needed a new tie. And so Freddie bought me, I remember that tie. It was the one with big lilies on, right?
Yeah, we went down to Holt Renfrew at the Yorkville Mall. And at the time, of course, we were all wearing very bright ties. And I remember David and myself picking out this. It was a fabulous tie. I think it was about $150.
I know. He spent more on my tie than I spent on rent.
But, you know, David was an individual that when he came into my life, I knew there was something very special about you. And
My mom always said, oh, you're special.
Well, you definitely were a special individual, and you impacted my life, I think, pretty much from the get-go. And
I'm not paying him to say that, by the way. He's just being nice. But, Freddie, you listen to the show. I mean, this is funny, having friends who listen to the show. You listen to the show every day.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
And you actually sometimes listen to a show twice or three times, right? Is that right?
I do.
Yeah. So what is it about the show that, for you, especially having a friend who's doing it, because, I mean, that's weird. When we talk, you kind of know everything that's going on in my life. You're listening to the show all the time. You know where I am, what I'm up to. It kind of feels weird sometimes. We chat. It's like there's nothing to talk about because you know everything.
Well, you know, David lives a pretty busy life, and I've had the good fortune of spending quite a bit of time with yourself. And
We were on the road together for, what, almost 3 years?
That's right. Yeah.
So we lived in a hotel room. I mean, there's nothing I don't know about this guy. I could draw him naked if you want.
Well, that'd be a breeze. But, no, I love listening to the show, and I've encouraged a number of people, including my children. You know, the show for me, David, is it's inspiration, and you've interviewed a number of wonderful guests, and including Larry, who I've had the opportunity to get to know and introduce you to as well. But for myself, I look forward to it because by surrounding myself with like-minded people and to have that opportunity to listen to some of your wonderful guests that you interview, it just makes my days on a number of occasions.
Oh, Freddie, hold my hand. We're holding hands now. But Larry, you know, I was thinking about, you know, when we sort of do a show like this. This is, you saw what happened, right? I walked out the door. I said, hey, guys, you know, you're here at 6 in the morning. You guys are sitting out on the deck already having a cup of tea. But what we were chatting last night, and I found that fascinating. You know, when you were on the show, we talked about your particular company, Opus, and the solution that you have. But what fascinated me, we were also talking about Tumblr just sold for $1.1 million to a 23-year-old kid.
Right.
Starts Tumblr, which, if you don't know what it is, Tumblr is a website where creative artists and designers and those kinds of...
It's a template for blog, for people to
bring their gift all in one spot, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And here you are in that space. Mm-hmm. You know, you're 2 years in, or 3 years?
Between 2 and 3 years,
Into building a technology. Yeah. And what's similar about your technology and Tumblr, or what's another one you told me just sold? You said Instagram?
Instagram, yeah. Instagram sold
and you
Facebook
said
for $1 billion, yeah. And
that's
sold for zero revenue, yeah.
Zero revenue, $1 billion. And, again, it was... How long did that one take before it was...
Oh, goodness, they were... literally within the first 3 months or so.
They came up with a concept and sold it in 3 months for $1 billion.
Yeah.
What is it about that space where I mean, because even your own valuation on your company now, even though really it's early days in the company, but obviously it's picking up speed pretty fast.
Very much.
You're going to be one of those stories. You're going to be one of those stories where, you know, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars valuation already. Mm-hmm. How does that feel?
Well, you know what? It's kind of, you know, first of all, I mean, there's a process. And one of the things that you'll find in the technology world is that there's instant value to something. And a lot of people get into technology and the technology business to try and make that big dollar. And those are the guys that tend to fail because they don't have an outcome. They don't bring a value to the marketplace. And for instance, Instagram, it blew up. It blew up really fast because it was just such an easy app.
That when you say blow up, in other words, it grew
really fast overnight.
So they had like 14,000 users.
In 24 hours, imagine there's no advertisers, nothing out there. It just took off. So to take that and integrate that with a Facebook platform, which they did, it just brings so much more value add to the customer. So Facebook really had a great vision of what they would do with that. So it created more value for the customer. And not only that, they were on the front page of every newspaper in the world. Right. And it was big, big news. Tumblr, a young kid again, that come up with a very simple.
But what's fascinating about that, what they have in common, like the same with you, though, is you needed something.
Right.
So you designed an opus around the idea. It's like a Facebook for business, right? It's a collaborative space where people come.
Yeah.
And then what you were describing yesterday to my assistant, Denise, you know, and it's like, everyone, if you and I want to work on a project with Freddie, we can have our own little bucket. And so all the emails that come to me into my email account will find itself to the right bucket where we can work together and collaborate.
Right.
And only people we invite into that bucket can come play in that bucket. Mm-hmm. So it means that I could have 10 projects running at the same time and have 10 individual buckets. Mm-hmm. And there could be 50 people working in one bucket. So this is amazing. Like you're talking about law firms, you're talking about, you know, dentist offices, you're talking about anyone who collaborates, who shares information. But anyone who's like me, who's creative, that collaborative space becomes, it just simplifies life, right?
It does. And I think that
part. This is a free pitch, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm just gonna... Thank you, David.
We were planning this. He's just pulling a $100 bill out of his pocket right now.
I think that, again, going back and creative value, I mean, we built, not Opus, but it was a docket system for my manufacturing company in 1999. And it was really kind of the infancy level of Opus. And then, it never left me. I had this love affair with technology and it did different things. But with our software, we like to call that project, we call them workspaces. So right now we're in a workspace. We're on a beautiful patio overlooking these mountains, and this is our workspace right now. So I identified that could be the front of someone's truck in construction. It could be a coffee shop. It could be a desk. It could be a kitchen table. So those workspaces, a virtual workspace is really important to be that kind of, give yourself that kind of diversity, but to carry that with you. And as I mentioned before, that workspace that we talked about, when you have that workspace and you bring someone in, so it's private yet public. Yeah, I can bring anybody around the world.
If we were working on a project right now, let's say we were, it could be on the show, let's say that we were working on a project, but we could have 5 or 6, 7 of us all around the world, but all sharing the same documents as well, right?
All in the work in the shared workspace, right? So it's everything from upload documents to collaboration, but it's all there. So when you're bringing someone in, it's not like collecting a bunch of files and sending out a file. You pull them into that workspace. Everything's there at their
And so when Denise, my assistant, was looking at the space yesterday, she's like blown away of how much easier her life's going to be, because I do have a lot of projects. So I'm working on, 12, 15 different projects at the same time that involve a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. So then, anyway, I just find it fascinating. What I'm really interested, though, for you, though, is this idea that already, when you've got valuations of hundreds of millions of dollars, and that, your story, I can see it now. I can really see the fact that it's going to be one of these stories, that somebody's going to offer you a lot of money for this company. Not necessarily that's your exit strategy, because it's you bought it.
Yeah, exactly.
But at some point, why do people sell? Why did Tumblr sell to Yahoo just recently?
In defense of all those people that do sell, I think that it would be for individuals. And the young kid from that sold Tumblr, I mean, brilliant, brilliant.
23. Yeah, he was. I watched him being interviewed. This kid is a sharp kid.
So I mean, that's added value too. And I'm certain that he's going with that company.
Yeah.
And he'll be on there as a you know, they're acquiring a talent as well. It's not just a product; they're acquiring talent and they're bringing that in. So where he can grow from there with the infrastructure that they have at Tumblr, the money they have, and the tools and the resources they have. I mean, what's possible for this man?
Sure.
So, and that's really where it comes from. And other people that do maybe get lucky. I mean, one of the luckiest success stories we've had is Facebook. I mean, here's a bunch of kids in college decide to start ranking girls on the campus, and again, the word blew up. It blew up really fast, and.
Do you want to hear a funny story about Facebook? There's a kid in Edmonton who started a Facebook type project, and I invested with him. And we were going to actually do some consulting there. And I just got really busy. There was some stuff going on, and we didn't have the time for it. But it was exactly the same. It was started in a university in Edmonton. And the same thing in photos. There were so many similarities. It was scary. And this young kid had this idea. And it was probably 3 years before Facebook ever emerged, right? And he was out there. And we didn't see it. I mean, obviously, I wasn't a techie kind of guy. I wasn't on the computers very much. And I liked him, and I could see that there was a value. I just didn't realize what it could have been at that time, right? And I suppose that's what happens if you...
And how did it work out?
Well, obviously, it was one of those things where we just didn't put the energy into it, and he just kept, it just stayed small. It stayed into that area. It didn't spread out. It didn't have that same. Well, I think what Zuckerberg did, he started going to all the campuses, right? So he started. Harvard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then he started doing all these campuses, it started to pick up speed.
It really blew up, yeah. But again, looking at technology, David and Fred, We look at Facebook as that holy grail, that great company, and sometimes we have a tendency to compare ourselves to Facebook, opposed to saying it's like in hockey terms, it could be comparing every hockey player to Wayne Gretzky in terms of their value or not. If you're not Wayne Gretzky, you're not good enough. And if you really thought that mentality in the NHL, you wouldn't have very many teams, because there's really one Wayne Gretzky of his talent, his caliber, and his dynamic way that he played. And technology companies kind of fall in that same spot. So when people start saying, well, how do you compare to Facebook? Well, there's other people in Facebook space right now that are very successful businesses.
Sure.
That the beauty of businesses, you can be number 10 on the list or number 150 on the list or 2,000 on the list in terms of how big you are, but you determine your profits. You determine the outcome of your and a $100 million company might be just fine for you, and that's a terrific company. A $10 million company with major margins being online might be really good for you. So there's many spaces that Fred, you and I talked this morning about spaces that people sell that have technology that we never heard of before. But again, it complements another infrastructure.
Sure.
It complements another web-based platform.
Yeah. Well, I find it fascinating that in this space right now in web, you've got that young guys and young girls who are 18, 19, who have that thought of a global business, or thought of creating platforms that impact and really offer solutions. But Freddie, I was going to ask you a question. You're not a techie guy at all, right? I mean, did you turn on a computer 4 years ago?
Actually, Dave, I remember the first time I ever seen a laptop. I think I was sitting with yourself and a guy from London, Ontario, by the name of Greg LaRock. And Greg just got this beautiful new laptop, and you were both encouraging me to send an email to my wife. I said, I've never sent an email.
So, but it's interesting, though, that you and Larry become really good friends, because, I mean, tech space isn't really a space that I would have thought you in, but this fascinates you too, right? I mean, you're enjoying this, and, oh, there's the phone. Larry just said to Fred, turn your phone on. See? He doesn't even know how to turn his phone off.
I thought I turned it down, but I guess I didn't.
Oh, yeah. That's right, turn it off. But with you, I mean, your specialty really is face-to-face. I mean, you're a guy that still believes in going out there and knocking on doors, and really, that's what we did together, cold calling. And so imagine every day we get up. I mean, some of the adventures we went on were just remarkable, right? I mean, you get up, we'd be in a truck in rural Saskatchewan somewhere and just knocking on farm doors and chatting to people all day long. Do you miss that? You don't do that so much anymore, but do you miss that kind of...
No, you're right. I don't do that anymore, but I do miss, and it's been beautiful just spend the last couple of days here with Larry and yourself. How I met Larry was through a friend of mine in Michigan, Mark Levesque. And, David, when I contacted you about Larry, I just knew instantly when I met Larry there was something special where I needed to bring the two of you together. So not coming from a tech world, but what I came from a world of knowing and understanding people.
Right,
and
right.
It was beautiful to be a part of something where, and as I've got to know Larry and understand what his real values are in life, and I shared with Larry last night after we went to bed that I'm an individual because my background is going to doing cold calling. I'm not always the one that comes up with the idea or a part of it, but I'm the messenger. I can take the message and I can build upon it and work with individuals. And I enjoy getting face to face with people.
Well, I know, but it's one of those things that scares. I mean, we have a lot of network marketers listen to the show. We have a lot of people who in sales. We have a lot of people who are starting out. They want to create success.
Sure.
But having that muscle of actually going out there and tapping on doors. And that's what I've done every time I've launched a company. At the end of the day, you have to go and tap on doors. It's like, Larry, I mean, you flew out here to chat with me. That's like tapping on doors in some ways that you know that there's people that you want in your space in this
Absolutely.
Infancy stage
Absolutely.
Where that really can help out, right? That can collaborate.
No question, yes.
What do you think? How do you build that muscle, Fred? How do you build the muscle of just having the courage, if you have an idea, to go just tap on doors and talk to people? I mean, you connect a lot of people together, but where did that come from?
Well, you know, a long time ago, I had an individual say to me...
A long time ago, you poor old bugger!
There was a day where I wasn't too motivated. I didn't want to go out to work that day. And, you know, we'd had a few pops the night before, and he said to me, he says, well, tell me something, Freddie. Are you going to have more pain or pleasure by sitting in this hotel today? And I thought, you know, that's a great example. Because the pleasure that we get after we knock on the door, and sometimes we get rejection, and that's sitting is a little closer to the yes. So for myself, I've kind of carried that through. It is pleasurable whether or not I go out and necessarily always make a sale. I've developed a rapport with a number of people through the day. So getting back with our listeners that are doing different things and networking, I think it's really just getting up the courage and the desire to want to do that and to realize that each day that we're out and about or whether we're making our calls or using the different infrastructures of communicating with people today now, the results will come if you are persistent and if you follow through with your plan, once you put your plan.
But your follow-up, I mean, that's the thing that why you were so successful in that space, right, is that
Absolutely.
Your follow-up. I've never known anyone like you. They'd have to shoot you, but that was it. I mean, if once you initiated a conversation, and there was some interest in someone, you would not. I mean, you would keep showing up, you would keep coming back, and sometimes it would be like 15, 20 contacts before somebody would say yes to you, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I had one guy in Saskatchewan. I think I went back to his house 20 times, David. In fact, his wife was a school teacher, and after selling this gentleman on a number of occasions, there was one time when we were working in the area and I ran short on product. And I asked him if I could go back and borrow some of the product and I would replace it. And it got to the point where his wife would see me coming and she'd say, you know, I don't know what it is. Every time you come here, you sell my husband something. So I don't want you coming back. So, I always made notes. I wasn't much for setting goals. And when I got involved with direct sales, a friend of mine said to me, he says, well, where's your goals? What's your goal for today? And I said, what do you mean, my goal? He says, well, you don't have your goals written down. And so I started writing my goals down years ago. I'd wake up and I'd write them down the night before. That way, as I was sleeping subconsciously, I was thinking about it. That's my alarm, by the way.
There is an off switch on that sucker. You know that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, Larry, can you teach him how to use his phone?
Ding.
But another thing about your story, which I think is shows a lot of fortitude, and I hope you don't mind me going there, is, I mean, you know, there was a time where you'd had, I mean, really, really incredible wealth, and there's a time when you lost it, you know. So you went through this peaks and valleys of having everything, a gorgeous farm, you owned Arabian horses, you know, I mean, really a beautiful lifestyle, and I always find that journey of you know, sort of rags to riches, riches to rags, or rags to, but what was some of the big lessons? Any big lesson you've taken away from a journey like that? And was it really hard? How was it in the beginning when you lost everything? How hard was that?
Well, actually, David, I don't know whether you remember the conversation, but I remember having the conversation with you, and you said, you know, Freddie, you had a fire. You got out with your life. You're still alive. And I think what I learned from it was it's about the relationships that we develop with people, and as we've stayed close over the years, for the lesson for me is I've never lost sight. I know there's another opportunity, and sometimes during our journey we do different things, and we get back full circle. This trip out here, for example, for me it's like coming full circle. We kind of met in this area. We met in Toronto, but we came back, and this is really where we started developing our relationship as we started.
In Kelowna, same city.
So,
but there was you said something there which I don't want to miss is that, you know, when you lost it all, and I mean, to go from somebody at the time, I mean, material things were quite important back then, right? I mean, having the farm, having the horses, having the beautiful cars was important, right? At that time, would you agree?
Yes.
But you found something more beautiful as well. And again, but I love the idea when you hit where it was when everything went, you know, which is just, again, it happens in business. It happens to a lot. Walt Disney went bankrupt 7 times, right? But the fact that you found something bigger, there was something more beautiful you found. Is that what you just alluded to, right? That
Absolutely.
Idea of relationships became more important than everything else. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Now you can have both.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So, Larry, you know, go back to you on this. With this idea of success, I mean, you're a guy who is really driven by efficiency.
Yes.
You know, you had a hockey background, but you're, you know, here you are in this space where you again lost a manufacturing company. So you've been through that peaks and valleys. Do you feel that, both of you, I suppose it's for both of you, I feel that all of those times where, you know, I had a lot and I lost a lot are the times where I really sort of started to discover what was most important. I mean, was that for you too? Did you ever lose heart, or did you, you know, when you had to close down your company, I mean, you put a lot of years in there, right?
Well, I sold it off. So, but again, the profit margins dropped to the point where we really were just breaking even. So
right.
We weren't making any money. That was the hardest part, is the fact that you had success in a particular industry, and then the industry kind of, you know, went away. Hey, we were in the textile industry there. So
well, you were in textiles with China coming on board.
Yeah,
fast,
so really, you know, when you're younger, and I was quite young, I mean, you fight it for a while, and then you finally realize it, that you you have to be innovative and creative and do things. So, you know, as I was listening to Fred speak and talk about, you know, a bit about his journey, the key ingredient is that we are competitors, that we do like competition. We do like to be challenged in a lot of ways. And I think that's the biggest thing that I was focused on. I think I may have mentioned on your last show that I've never considered myself failing at anything.
Right.
I've had, you know, a few obstacles, and we've had some solutions we had to really think hard on. But at this end of the day, they were all done with, in my opinion, with a great deal of
intention. But you've laid everything on the line for this company.
Oh,
I mean,
for sure, sold the house, sold land, sold investments.
So you've actually financed this whole thing,
yes,
with this belief that it's going to work. I mean, that takes some, well, a vision, but yeah, courage, and also support from your family. I mean, you've got, you know, three sons,
yeah,
and all of them competitive hockey players, and your
right.
wife, and so here you are starting something, and now the light's at the end of the tunnel. You can see the fact that this is not, I mean, people are loving the product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got companies
right.
who are just embracing it as their
yes.
main communication tool. You've got individuals like me who can see that it's an easier way to really live life. In other words, it can give me more space to
right.
really create a
right.
kick-ass life, right?
Absolutely, yes.
But you've laid everything on the line. I mean, you've burnt all bridges.
Yeah, I have, and I think that in doing so, I mean, it's been the hardest, most exciting thing and rewarding thing I've ever done in my life.
Do you get scared?
Yeah, it's like a roller coaster, you know. And sometimes you can't think too far down the road. In our world, you got to think short sprints, we call them, and real short sprints, and get to that next step and small steps. And I may have alluded to to this in the last show is, you know, I remember when you're talking about climbing Kilimanjaro, and sometimes you'd be taking half steps, not full steps, and sometimes you do have to take half steps, and those half steps equal a massive, massive leap.
Sure.
You know, we talked about acquisitions and people selling companies and Tumblr, so on, and I mean, you don't know the small little steps that this young man went through for maybe a couple of years.
Yeah, all these
small steps and scratching his head, maybe want to do a pivot, change different directions in terms of what he wanted to go, but he probably stuck with what he believed and created value.
Did you ever want to quit? I mean, has this ever been?
Never once, right? Never, ever. I wake up every day excited to invent. Yeah. Create every day.
So. I like that. Excited to invent. Yeah. Everyone should write that. Do you think, again, we've only got a few minutes left here. I just want to hand it back to you two. As regular listeners to the show, both of you, which, by the way, thank you. I mean, it gratifies me. I always say if one person's life can be impacted by work, my work anyway, it's going to be... So there's two of you, so I'm... This is awesome.
You got two.
But is there anything you want to ask? I mean, me, or is there any... Just the last couple of minutes here, is there anything you thought, or when you listen to the show, is there anything that you'd like to yell down the radio? Say, Dave, do this or whatever. Any thoughts on it, either one of you?
Well, you know, Dave, I think that we all are impacted by different individuals in our lives. And when I think about, you know, the kick-ass life you live, as I've known you, and you talk about how I'm learning your journey and what you're doing because of the distance between us by listening to the show, because we don't have a chance to talk every day. We used to spend copious amounts of time together. So, you know, for myself, with what Larry just talked about, when I think about giving up, right, there was a time where, you know, I wanted to give up. I mean, enough was enough. And it was because of those relationships I had with people like yourself and now Larry that encouraged me to go on. And sometimes for me, just flicking the show on, it might be just one thing that somebody says that day I can take forward. And that will give me the courage to continue going on as I embark upon my journey of reestablishing myself out there. And so, as I said earlier, what I've learned after having a lot of money and losing a lot of money, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It's the, as you say, David, the collection of people that we have in our life that makes the difference. And
But it's true, though. I mean, a lot of people, when they, and family members, it's easy to lose people or think someone's in your life. But when you hit the, when the shit hits the fan, they suddenly disappear, right? Did you find that some there were people in your life that did judge and disappear and turn their back on the situation?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's funny we're having this conversation because earlier I was sharing with Larry about my father and how my father impacted my life. And I remember years ago my father said, you know, you're close friends. You're a very fortunate man if you can count them on your one hand. And we often build different relationships and acquaintances, but the people that are really our true friends, they're with you all the time. And so I've been able to experience that, and I've experienced the loss of people that I thought were close friends.
Sure. So, Maya, your dad, I want to tell one quick story about your dad. A tough old bugger. He passed away a few years ago, but this guy was not a very big man in stature, but massive in heart. And he's out there. I think he was probably in his late 80s and he's in his tractor and he gets a flat and jacks up the tractor. The tractor falls on his finger and cuts his finger off, right? At the end of his finger. Is that right?
Yeah, what it was is it was a farming accident and he had a, they call him a hopper wagon and there was a flat on that and my nephew was with him. But as they were jacking it up, the wagon came down on it and they jacked it up and they pulled the finger out and they went to the hospital. They didn't put the finger back on.
Yeah, but this is tough. Old guy, he goes, sort of, you know, drives himself up to the hospital and gets up to the hospital and then comes back, finishes his job, you know. But just a real great, absolutely, great man. We'll dedicate the show to him. How's that?
Oh, that's fantastic. That's
awesome. And why don't you, any thoughts, questions you'd like to wrap up with there?
You know, well, like, you know, I do. And I would thank you for having me. You've been just in, both you and Jen have been incredible. Just host for me, and I really invited myself. I've been pushing for a while to come out and see you, I think, and we made it work, and I'm so glad I did. And one of the things that I find really fascinating is the simplicity to your life, yet you cover a lot of ground. I find that extraordinary. I really do. I find that fascinating, the way you digest information, and it could be a half hour later and you could come back with an answer you maybe thought of a little bit. You have this great process. You have a great mind process coming through. But one of the words that stuck up my mind throughout the weekend was practitioner. That you talk about practitioners, be this kick-ass practitioner, and you truly are. You are as transparent as they come, and I admire that in you. I really do. So if I could ask you a question, you do have a lot on the go. You do cover a lot of ground, and you're peaceful. You have this in the movie Jerry Maguire, it was like you have this Kwan in your life, this Kwan. And so how did you get to that point, and how did you get to that point to create that sense of peace, or else you just do a really good job at faking it.
No.
I can tell he's not. I can assure you that is not the case.
Well, something happened yesterday. We were having a meeting out on the deck here, and Denise was here, and suddenly the painter who's upstairs comes down and says, there's a tree falling on the car in the driveway.
That was amazing.
And so we walk outside, and I mean, this tree that I just had an arborist out, this tree that looks absolutely perfect, and it doesn't look, there's any old, it's just a gorgeous tree. A massive, massive branch had fallen off this tree. I'm talking about massive. I mean, three of us couldn't lift it. I mean, it was a massive branch, fell off the tree in my driveway and lands on top of Denise's car. And I think something struck me yesterday was how, when we walked out there, I mean, the words out my mouth, I looked at Denise and said, this is hilarious, right? And then we're laughing and joking. We just went and grabbed a saw, we cut it up, we get rid of it. And there was something that I realized afterwards, and I said it to Jen when we were driving away later in the day. I said, it's funny, we don't realize until shit happens how we're going to respond or react, And I think what it is I think there's not many things bother me. I don't get bothered. I don't worry about anything. Because, I mean, if it's already happened, I can't change it. So I don't even try. So if a situation happens like that, the tree's already fallen. So now it's a question of, we can have a little laugh about it. We can fix it. But there was no stress. And I think a lot of people, when I watch them, and that's a small example. I mean, if we're talking about a money situation, we're talking about a big decision, we're talking about crap happening, right? I think most people just, they just don't accept what's happening. And I teach this, I always ask people, I say, do you believe that the everything's on purpose? Do you believe that the universe is on purpose? And for some people, they would use the word God or Allah or Buddha or however they express faith, that everything's happening as it should. Mm-hmm. And I would say that 99% of every audience I've been on always answers yes, yet they resist everything that's happening. So yeah. Shit happens, and it's like, well, then, now they want to get upset about it. Like if you're an fender bender, when I've been hit a couple of times from behind, when I get out of the car, I'm always in a good mood. I go back, hey, you all right? How's it going? All right? And I already know how I'm going to react to things. So when stuff happens, I'm never surprised by my reaction because I've already told myself when the bad things come, I'm going to be really steady. I'm going to have a steady hand. Like if I become a paraplegic, I know how I'm going to be when I open my eyes. I know that I'm going to be the best damn paraplegic that ever lived on the earth. And I'm going to have a positive attitude because I've seen enough people who have had accidents and I've seen both people who gave up. My mom's husband gave up. He lost a leg, gave up. He just laid in a bed, and he's not dead yet, but you think he was dead. So for the last 4 years, he's just laid there. My mom's life is a complete burden because she has to go there and look after him every day, but he just quit on life because he lost half his leg, right? And I've known people who are quadriplegic or paraplegics who wake up and they're just perfectly positive and aligned, and they just start a new direction. And I met a guy in Vernon who was an active sports guy. He broke his back in an accident, and he started carving. And he became, and that's where I met him, at a carving fair. And he says, I found my real passion. He said, when I lost my legs, he said, I found what my real purpose was. And you could see his absolute love of what he was doing, right? So I think that's it. I don't resist anything. And I think resistance equals pain. And so when stuff's going on, I always step into it knowing that I don't know what it will look like in the end, but I know it's happening for a reason. As long as I don't resist the reason, what's going on, like that tree. We could have gone, oh, shit. You know, there could have been all that tension. There could have been anger. There could have been all kinds of things, right? But we were. We were all laughing. We just got the job. We all got, three of us all got it cleaned up real quick, right? And what was hilarious, even though the car was absolutely covered in these branches, there was no damage to the car, right?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Because the way the branch fell, I mean, it was like, it's crazy. We should actually use that. I'll get the photograph for that and use it as a show notes.
You should.
Yeah, we'll put
you
that
should.
Up there, right?
Yeah,
but yeah, does that answer it?
It does.
Awesome.
It does,
yeah. Well, we're a little bit over. So, you know, as we sit here now in gratitude of you guys coming out. And, yeah, I mean, we talk about my collection of friends. And I know, Larry, you're, you know now the door's always open. There's always a beer in the fridge. There's always food somewhere.
And you have to come and see me. You have to come
up. No, you don't have to do that, right? All right, so what's the last line, you guys? Do you remember what we say at the end of the show?
Yes, we did.
What are we going to say? Ready? One, two, three. We'll see you on the other side. Bye!
Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter @The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.